And thank you for joining the Walt Weekly Podcast Friday Live. My name is Walter Latham, and I am your host. And I'm joined by Christopher Sweeney, who is our co-host for today. Michelle is on vacation, and hopefully she's having a lovely time. All right, so today's topic is going to be about teachers and COVID. We talked about parents and how they feel about sending their kids back to school, you know, with the COVID protocols and things of that nature. Now, we want to hear from the teachers, okay? We have several teachers who will be joining us today to talk about their experiences and their position on the reopening of schools, whether that be in New York City, because we are represented by teachers from New York City and Washington, D.C. What are the teachers doing, and what are they thinking? What are they seeing? They're on the ground. They're in the front lines, right? They're on the front lines. And we would like to know, and I think our listeners would benefit from knowing how the teachers feel about the return to in-class learning, okay, coming out of the remote learning into. And what are the effects? There's a lot of things that we need to know and that our listeners would like to know. So with that said, I'm going to turn it over to your co-host for today, Mr. Christopher Sweeney.
Good afternoon, everyone. I had to take it off mute. Sorry about that.
That's okay.
Thank you. Thank you, Walter. And good evening, everybody. And welcome to the Walt Weekly Friday Live. Thank you to our live audience for joining. And please follow the Walt Weekly and share this podcast by clicking the share button below. The Walt Weekly Friday Live is brought to you by Michelle Sweeney Hair and Skincare. Our intro and outro music is provided by Uncle Nephew. Uncle Nephew's music can be found on all streaming platforms. Before introducing our special guests, let me introduce the Walt Weekly panel. Today we have Ernest J. Robinson out of Washington, D.C., a sergeant, veteran, and newly re-enlisted U.S. Marine. He is the senior consultant at B. Ernest Leadership and Professional Consultants. You can follow him on Facebook, Ernest J. Robinson, and Instagram at Ernest J. Robinson 2014. That's E.J. Robinson 2014. We have poet and author Judy Andrews from Brooklyn, New York, a former school teacher herself. Follow her on Facebook at Judy Andrews and Instagram at JudyNYC.Andrews. We also have not on the live right now, but listening in, the Honorable Gene Edwards, male district leader out of the 79th district in the Bronx.
All right, we have Shakira, a school teacher out of New York City. We have Crystal, an educator out of New York. And I'm sorry.
Cordinia,
another educator. And I'm going to turn it over to you, Walt, and you can properly introduce them when you call on each of them individually. And they can give a description.
Definitely. Thank you, Chris. Thank you. All right. I want to thank the teachers, thank the panel, thank you guys for joining us, because this is a very, very important subject. I'm a grandfather, and I'm worried about my granddaughters, and I hate to be in my kids' shoes to make the decision on whether they should go to school or not. So I can leverage the information, I hope to leverage, and our listeners can leverage the information that we're hearing from our teachers, because they are back. It's not a situation where they are going, they are back. And we want to hear from them. We want to hear from the teachers to get some insight as to what's going on. So I'm going to start out. We have three teachers. I'm going to start with Shakira first. And Shakira, could you just tell us a little bit about yourself and whether you're an active teacher? And what do you have? You have kids in school?
So, hello. Good evening, everyone. I've been teaching for a little over 20 years. started off in the private sector and been in the DOE for a little over 17 years. Currently in a public school, a progressive public school, and started as a literacy specialist, and now I'm a general education teacher.
And you're in New York City.
Is that correct? In New York.
I just want to make sure.
Yes.
Okay. All right, Crystal, could you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Good evening, everyone. My name is Crystal Bob Simple. I run a company that engages with 7 to 14-year-olds in summer camp programs as well as after-school programs. We see about 6,000 kids per year, and half of those kids are in New York City. Our other families are in 5 other states: New Jersey, Pennsylvania, Virginia, California, and the District of Columbia. And I have a college-age student who's on campus in California and a high schooler here in New York City.
All right. Thank you. Cordenia, could you tell us a little bit about yourself, please?
Greetings, and thank you again for inviting me, Judy, to join the Walt Weekly. I am an educator currently in the D.C. area. I have opted out of teaching this year after over 30 years in independent schools. I taught a little bit in New York City for about 13 years, and that included independent schools and public schools. So yes, I opted out because it's been a bit much these past year and a half.
I do have some questions. Y'all guys got the questions that I sent out, but it's only an indication between me and the panel. And I want y'all guys to basically drive the show, you know, telling us about what you're seeing. And I want to start with Shakira about, you know, you're back to school now. Are you, you know, what's your feel? What's your take on what you're seeing since you've been back?
Since I've returned, the class sizes are definitely smaller than what I've seen in years prior. Low enrollment. I think a lot of families have either, I know a lot of families who have moved out of state, upstate, or have figured out how to get their children into privatized schools instead.
Okay.
The morale is, it's good between teachers and the students. The students, I think everybody was sort of excited to be back in the school just to be amongst peers, you know, colleagues and the children amongst their peers. But it's an exhausting day, to say the least, not because of scheduling, but because of, you know, all the protocols that our school, we have to go through as far as, you know, breaks, bathroom breaks, hand washing breaks, you know, wearing the mask basically the entire day except for when they eat or if they get a moment to get outside, kind of stifles you a little bit. I find that at the end of the day, I'm pretty wiped out, you know, energy wise. But the kids are, you know, they missed being around their friends and they miss their teachers and they miss the in-school experience. So, you know, this first week was a bit of an adjustment because our building shares the building with 2 other schools. So the first few days were quite hectic because the other schools hadn't really discussed their pattern of movement for, you know, arrivals and dismissals, you know, in order to keep socially distant. So it was a little hectic to figure things out. But I think we are in a group.
Okay. You have a couple of kids in school. Do you have school-age kids?
I have two children of my own that are school-age kids, and they're actually in my school, which is a gift. So They're within my building.
Okay. Okay. All right. This is Crystal. I know that you service the school system, but I mean, how are you seeing things from your perspective?
Sure. I'll say two things. Number one, we didn't go back into schools in after-school programs in 2020 or 2021. Some of the just sort of lack of planning and clarity that had after-school programs like mine not able to operate last year, those things still are problems this year, with school openings, with unclear guidelines around COVID, with the school district trying to make up, you know, revenue on the backs of some of the providers. You know, we opted to not do after-school programs for the second year. And I have quite a number of colleagues who have done the same. And, you know, it feels it's against our mission. You know, we try to bridge the gap between school and home, you know, to provide enrichment that helps kids who need a little bit more than the school day is offering them, and parents who, you know, need more care. And so it's unfortunate, and it hurts to not be able to serve families in the way that we've been serving them for the past 10 years. What I'll say for my summer camp programs, which were really fully enrolled, which just speaks to the demand that families and kids had for something real and in person after a year of virtual schooling, you know, the kids were great. The kids were fantastic. All the adults in my space, and I'm just speaking like as a category, not like each person,
right,
the adults are the ones that had the trouble. The adults were more difficult to deal with in terms of parents and staff than any other year prior.
I know. Could you explain? Could you drill down a little bit about how?
You know, we all have to recognize that this past year and a half has been about trauma. You know, people have lost loved ones. They've lost jobs. They've lost a sense of security. And folks who, you know, like me, were providing services to people before this moment, we were the first line, right? We were the first step that people took back out into the world with their kids. And they weren't ready. They weren't ready. The prevailing, you know, wisdom was changing all the time. Should we mask? Do we have to mask? Oh, there's a new variant out. There's vaccines, but there's a lot of vaccine hesitancy. 80% of the kids that I serve aren't old enough for the vaccine, but the other 20% are. There was staff who wanted all kids to be vaccinated, but they didn't want to be vaccinated. You know, it just reflects a lack of real kind of comfort with mm-hmm. the current state of the COVID-19 pandemic. You know, and I can't blame anyone for being in a state of frenzy. It's hard to know what to do. So what that meant was whenever there was a COVID-related incident at one of my programs, the response from the adults was off the charts. And what that meant was everyone had an opinion about what we should have done. This is regardless of what the CDC or the licensing bodies, in my case, is usually the state's health department, regardless of what they said, even without regard for what parents agreed to. We were very clear with our COVID policies that if there were a positive case, these were the steps that we would take as a result of that. And whenever something came up, the adults, staff, and parents alike wanted to renegotiate. They wanted to be the ones to decide what should happen next. And it should come as no surprise to anyone on this call that within that population, there's disagreement. There were parents who were vehemently against masking. My kid is not going to be able to stand, you know, the hot summer months in a mask. And then there were parents that were like, everybody should be masked, whether they have a vaccine or not. And so you have this debate that we are seeing throughout our country, even within our own micro communities. And it all comes together in these institutions. And I know that school buildings are having that same thing happen to them right now. We are not on the same page. We are not in agreement. And we are standing firmly in our individual corners. And as educators and service providers, we're caught in the middle.
Wow. That's a tough one. You know, that fits the times, actually. I want to go to Cordelia. Cordelia, I know that you opted not to return to teaching, all right, because of what's going on. Could you just go through what your thought process was in making that decision? And I know what prompted you, but just put us in your mind about that decision that you made.
Sorry.
No, it's okay.
I was in the middle of sending a message because Ms. Crystal said it all. It's been such a debate. Like, there's so many unknowns that is the reason I opted not to go back into the classroom, even though I can't retire yet. I teach in independent schools. And it's not the number of years, we have to have the age to retire. I don't have the age to retire. And last year and the year before, I am thankful for the parents who were supportive, but there were so many parents who were, I don't know how to describe it. They wanted what they wanted for their children. And I understand that, but there was not enough grace for the fact that we were educating and continue to educate during a worldwide pandemic. I don't understand why there's so much debate over this vaccination. Kids have to be vaccinated for everything else. Why not this? Teachers, we have to be vaccinated for things before we start teaching. We have to be fingerprinted, and we have to go through so many protocols that I don't understand the debate on this one. So I opted to stay home because I have an elderly mother that I would like to visit as frequently as possible, and other family members. So it's just, this really has me baffled. And my heart goes out to all the teachers who are in the classroom, still on the front line, because I'm feeling like I've dodged a bullet. And I hope that's not true. I hope that everyone continues to be safe. But hearing about these numbers going up and these different variants, it's a scary time. And people are not addressing the reality. It's driven people to focus on their own individual desires, and it's scary.
Okay. And I know you stay in contact with your colleagues, even though you yes. opted out, you know, for this semester.
Yes, this, I yeah. do.
All right. And what they're saying, basically the same thing, or you get a consensus that a lot of teachers are thinking the way that you are?
Well, they're thankfully, all of my colleagues have been, you know, double masked. And but as Ms. Crystal said, that adds another layer of stress. Testing every week. It's focused more on the physical health so that any learning that happened should be a bonus or is a bonus, because now we're focused on or it seems like education is focused on the social, emotional for children and the adults, actually. And the learning is taking, I won't say a backseat, but it's not in the forefront that it used to be.
Okay. Well, I mean, as a grandparent, you know, I have no kids in school, but I do have two granddaughters that are in the first grade. All right. And I worry that we're going back too soon. And I'm going to address this to Shakira. because, you know, she has a double barrel situation. All right, Shakira, what do you think? And do you think that we open the schools too soon?
I honestly was surprised that schools are open for in-school learning. I was quite surprised, especially with the variants that are happening. That was my immediate concern once I realized that there was no virtual option. But then again, my children are young. So for me, especially with their age, you know, they did great with the virtual option. But because it's virtual and you're kind of relying on either yourself, which is not me, because if my children are home, that means I'm home too teaching.
Right.
You're relying on family members to kind of, if they're available, or someone else who is more likely not an educator to help facilitate their learning. So my husband and I were just baffled with making the decision about putting them in school, because they need that teacher interaction, suitor interaction for their learning. But again, it's the safety concerns, you know. So when I did return back to the school before school started for the children, you know, the teachers return early. That was my immediate question with my principal. And I can't pronounce her name. Tell me the name. Kalindra?
Cordinia.
I'm sorry, my mispronunciation. I believe she said that it's not necessarily the children, it's the adults that are kind of combative with the respect of mask wearing and those issues, you know. So when I discussed this with my principal, I was like, you know, I'm nervous not just for myself, but for my children, you know, I don't know what people are, their each individual child's home protocols are, as far as sanitizing their home, wearing masks, whom they, you know, are around, what they do on the weekends. Like, you know, I can't police other families because I know what we've been doing to make sure our home is healthy and that we don't, because my husband and I, we've all we got. So if someone gets sick, this is not good for our household. But my principal did assure me that, you know, when they were in school in hybrid last year, although some parents and some educators were resistant to masks and following the protocols, that overall this year, because of him, he stress that no mask, no entry. So basically, everyone has to wear a mask, regardless of what your feelings are. When it's time to take it off, you take it off and you get a breather. But if you're going to put your child in this school, know that this is a requirement and there's no ifs, ands, or buts about it. But still being in the school, it still makes me nervous, very much so. Like I had a child come up to me today during lineup to tell me that he wasn't coming to school today because he was sick. Like, this didn't make any sense to me. Why?
I don't mean to laugh. I really don't. But
I mean, we all laughed about it. I was like, you were actually physically here to come up to me on lineup to tell me that you weren't coming to school today because you were sick. But then again, you know, all parents, you know, at our school, we're worried. Every little sickness, it's now COVID. We don't no longer talk about the flu or a common cold. You know, it's all COVID related. So in our minds. So it's just very stressful, to say the least. And yes, we are focused on social emotional learning for the next month because we've had a lot of trauma, you know, within our own families as adults, and the children have had a lot of trauma. But for myself, being in the school, I intertwine my social emotional learning lessons with actual lessons. I don't want that whole COVID drop that they talked about, like we used to talk about with the students losing information over the summer. They talked about this big COVID drop. I was not going to stand for that for my children and for my students. So when we are discussing SEL, We are also intertwining it into some kind of literacy activity, writing activity. I'm still pushing literacy and writing. I'm intertwining it because I'm, you know, teaching ELA and social studies this year, and I have a co-teacher who does math and science. So I'm still educating. Like, I'm not going to let these kids, you know, falter in their education because of a pandemic that's happening that is at no way near their fault. You know, we are teaching brown children. You know, my school is very much mixed, but I don't want my students, who I consider my children, to have an educational gap because of things that are out of their control.
Well, okay, I want to keep you. I want to keep you. Okay, go ahead, Chris. Go ahead.
I just wanted to touch on what she just said, because mm-hmm. I think that's what's getting lost here, right? So we've had a year and a half of virtual learning, just virtual everything, right? Virtual interaction with family members, grandparents, everybody, right? And I think with that amount of time, people allowed their political views to get in the way, right? And they've drawn the line, and they've dug in their heels on this topic, right? And instead of taking the time to think about the reintroducing their kids back to school, they've spent all the time arguing over this COVID thing, not recognizing that these kids need to be educated. And for me, I was glad to hear Shakira say that she wasn't going to allow that. But how many teachers out there have that energy left to do what she's doing? These kids are going to lose big because of this. And most of it is because people have drawn their line in the sand politically, and they are not thinking about their children.
I would add that they're also not, they're so inflexible, right? That's what everyone is pointing to, right? And Chris, you're just talking about a certain, you know, way that people are very, very inflexible. The thing that gets me about some of the conversations that I've heard and have been a part of is people are no more prepared today than they were in March 2020. Of course, COVID caught us by surprise. We didn't know what Zoom was. We didn't know how to do it. We couldn't really think about, you know, the ways to teach and impart knowledge to kids. That was just an insurmountable thing. And many teachers and parents are in the same place that they were in 2020.
Okay.
The world doesn't work like that. We've had to figure things out, right? We've had to figure out how to get food, how to get information and resources to loved ones. And on the front of educating some of our students, people haven't been as aggressive about figuring out how to do it under the circumstances that we are faced with. They've just thrown up their hands and, like you said, decided to debate one aspect of our life. But life is going on.
And that's what I was. That's what I meant by that.
Yep.
Crystal hit it right on the nose. I don't know if I was trying to say it, if I portrayed it the way she did, but we figured out how to eat, how to do everything else, and we've not figured out how to educate our kids through this. And that is the problem for me that I see about it. Everything else, we figured out how to get back out to play, to go to baseball games, to go to football games, to do everything else. This hugely important thing, educating our kids, we can't figure that out. That's a problem.
Yeah, it is. You're absolutely right. You're absolutely right. Now, this is addressing, this is a follow-on, I guess, to Chris's question or statement, is that I was reading an article wherein they said that minority kids, specifically African-American kids, are like, they lost like 2 years. All right. They're like behind 2 years in reading, writing, and arithmetic. Well, the academic courses that, you know, the required courses. Are you finding that to be the case, Shakira, Crystal, Cordelia?
Well, first of all, we have to consider what level they were at before the pandemic.
Right.
So we have children before the pandemic. I had a fifth grade class that were on a second and third grade level then. So, and a lot of those students, once we switched to fully virtual, I have to tell you that March to June, I had a lot of, we can legally say they were dropouts. They did not attend class at all. So that's an issue. Definitely behind. You know, they say the 2 years. I want to say that when I start my assessments with my students this next week, I'm going to find out if this is actually true, because I have a very well mixed group of students and I want to see where it's at. Although these students are new to me, they're not new to the school, and hopefully their teachers last year during virtual did some sort of assessment, and I can maybe go back another year to see where they're at and if there was such a significant loss. I don't know. But what I wanted to add about New York City schools, especially in the more minority districts, my major issue is that we returned to buildings that looked exactly the same as they did in March 2020. The DOE did nothing for these districts to improve the quality of the air for these children and for the adults in this building. They treat the adults like we are babysitters and we move cattle around rather than taking care of students and ourselves, because we have to go back to our families. They gave us two portable HEPA filters in our classroom. They did not fix the air filtration systems in the building. They provided hand sanitizing little machines around the classroom, in the hallways. Outside of that, nothing. The teachers and the students are providing our own hand sanitizers, our own wipes, our own cleaning materials. Yes, janitorial does do their end of the day cleaning, but I know of certain schools and certain districts that when those students walk back into the building, you could clearly see that those buildings had been working on making sure the environment was safe for their families and their kids.
Wow. Hi, Shakira. This is Judy. I just have a follow-up to what you just said. Have you brought any of these complaints to the UFT, to the United Federation of Teachers? Who knows about this for your school? Does the UFT rep know?
So our UFT.
How rep, are they handling it?
Our UFT rep retired this year.
Wow.
He's
a very opportune time, huh?
You know, he did his 30 some odd years at the school. He had to work virtually last year. He was completely just stressed and overwhelmed and decided this was his that was his last teaching year when we ended in June 2021. He was an excellent UFT rep, and those concerns were definitely discussed with him. Now, as a retiree, I'm not quite sure as how far his involvement remains with the UFT. So, but those concerns were definitely brought up at the end of the school year. But he wouldn't have known what he was walking into because he decided to retire. We don't have a rep right now, but we do express those concerns to the UFT.
Well, I'm sure this is happening across the board. Something has to be done about it. And I'm hoping that the new chancellor will, you know, discuss this, because I don't think the parents know, which is usually the case. Parents are usually lacking information.
The problem is our mayor. Our mayor who doesn't really care. He's pushing an agenda for these kids to get us back in the buildings, regardless of the scenario as well. And the chancellor too. It's just, you guys were saying before, it's very, very political. We took the care and the love and the concern out of the educational system, and they're completely treating it like a corporation rather than a place that we educate humans.
And you know,
yes, I know that I was coaching over the summer. I was helping other teachers. I'm retired now, but I retired early using my TDA to help. And I noticed that students were not showing up to class. I had one teacher that I was coaching had something like two or three students per day in her class, and she was getting written up for it because, you know, the administrators wanted to know, why aren't the students coming? And there were just so many different layers as to that question. You know, family members who were in the hospital or very sick that they had to take care of, or, you know, it is an issue. And I think that more concerns need to, for New York anyway, be brought to Mr. Mulgrew to let him, I'm sure he knows, but I think it has to be sealed because to get him to show some type of action. So I guess what else can be done? Because it's only September.
At the end of the day, we're going to see how the disparity in our infrastructure is going to determine the impact of COVID on our community. Just like with the rains and the floods we saw last week, 2 weeks ago, the folks that were most impacted are places where there haven't been investments in roads and sewage, places that don't normally flood, led to tragic outcomes for families. And what
we lost, you, Chris.
I mean, this is the point. Their buildings safe for the workers, and that same thing is not happening for our kids. So at the end of the day, you can set aside the masking, the vaccine. We are trying to educate children and putting adults in spaces that are not safe, and we know they're not safe. And until that gets addressed, you know, you can see why, you know, you have parents opting out, educators opting out. You know, we are not getting the attention that we need.
I want to say, for me, I think part of the problem, though, is parents who, like, they're, like I said, everybody has their position in this and they're ready to fight, right? But there was ample time for the parents to put enough pressure on these, on the mayor, on the chancellor, before school opened, to demand that they laid out their plan. And that pressure, I don't feel, was being applied. Where is the PTA? Where are all these teachers? Where is the UTF? They should have all been united together in July and said, hey, by the middle of August, we want to see your plan, what you've done, and how this is laid out before we let our children back into the schools. So if you don't put pressure, they're not going to do any.
Well, don't you think that's a, I think that's a concerted effort, though, and that pressure should have come down on the mayor and the governor. I mean, they're pushing to have, you know, in-class learning, but the first thing that the electorate should ask is, what's the plan? All right?
If I can
just go ahead.
Add, I think this is going to change education in a hugely pivotal way. I know pivot is the word of the year, the word of COVID for teachers, but this is going to be bigger. The changes we're going to see is going to be bigger than any one district because this is worldwide. I taught at independent schools, and there are so many different factions, board members, parents that have so much say. So what we're seeing is just the beginning of this tip of this iceberg that's going to change education as we know it.
Okay. And what do you think it's going to lead to? Have you been able to think through it and come to some type of scenario at the end? What do you think it's going to change? How?
It's been interesting to see how many parents have been blessed enough to homeschool their children through this. And as Ms. Shakira says, she's keeping her kids on point. Not every parent has that ability, but it's definitely going to, I feel it's going to move through the haves and have-nots, not just financially, but with resources and with just the ability to keep their families on board and on point. it's going to be interesting to see where this goes.
Okay. Hey, Ernest, do you have any questions for the teachers?
Well, I mean, I've been, you know, just consuming and listening, and I think every educator that's on this line and that is listening for everything that you all do. But I think some of the questions that I kind of had were centered around advocacy. You know, the efforts, I think Chris had asked about the efforts of UCF, the efforts of PTA, the efforts of actually holding elected officials, considering this is, you know, we're approaching another election day. How have any of you worked with elected officials to being able to lobby for funds to being able to address some of those gaps that you all have noticed?
I honestly wouldn't know where to begin, to be honest with you. I'm just being honest. I mean, our local councilman only shows up for photo ops.
You know, you have to be prepared in order to advocate. There's no other way to say it, right? So as a person who's standing at the ready, maybe to, you know, put some things in motion for a group of people, that can't happen from home, right? Somebody's got to have a plan. People are reacting to the plans that people have, the ideas that they have to keep, you know, kids safe. And I just feel like a lot of people who were responsible, and I'm mostly talking about leadership. You know, I'm not really talking about teachers, you know, per se. I'm saying that a lot of the leadership at the district level and at the superintendent level, they didn't go back into the buildings early enough. They didn't think about how they could do the work that they are tasked with doing under the current circumstances. And so, you know, not only did teachers and students show up without a full understanding of what it was going to mean to be in these buildings when we're still in the middle of a pandemic, some of the leaders showed up at the same time. And they showed up without ideas. And so Who's leading the charge, right? What are we actually talking about here? What are the strategies that they're going to implement to keep kids safe? You've got to do that type of work on the ground.
And, you know, and to your point, that's the reason why I have brought it up. It's not to put you or any specific teacher on, you know, out front. It was your point is grassroots advocacy starts with those who are on the ground. So there is no one who knows better than a teacher, to a mother of student age children who have to go through this to actually testify, whether it's at your General Assembly, whether it's, you know, whether it's down here in Washington, D.C., to being able to get federal support. But obviously, you know, you start with your local area, you work with your city council, you work with your General Assembly on the state level, whatever, to be able to get the support that you need. But those stories are unique and you add all of the credibility to it. Part of some of the things that I've seen on, because I'm a congressional relations officer, so I work in D.C. and work in advocacy and work on this. But when you have superintendents, they're the ones, they're not teaching. They're not the ones who have to listen to all the parents, you know, every single day. And I think if some of the support came from some of the unions to apply more pressure to them, then that's where I think the parents also I think that's where the cohesiveness has to take place, is it has to be a dual effort. And to your point, maybe everyone's not as vested as you are and some of the other teachers that's on the line. But I think that's a great way to start. But I did have another question as it pertained to the mindset of because we've now have been conditioned over the last nearly 2 years about COVID, about mask hesitancy with vaccinations, et cetera. And so when you get conditional learning, how long do you think, what is the learning curve that any of you think that's going to take to kind of get out of the mindset that we have right now as it pertains to, you know, mask and being more conscious of germs and things of that nature in COVID. Well, what do you think that's going to look like in the next year?
Are we talking just in the schools?
In the schools, yes.
Well, it feels like each school is working individually, honestly. Like I said, at our school, it's very much wear a mask or you have to stay home kind of thing. So, you know, the principal has laid out the policy as if you want your child to attend the school, we have to keep everybody safe. So we haven't, as far as I know, had any issues with any of the staff for this year and any of the students. It's kind of innate for us at this point, our routines and how we function as classes on keeping our environment safe and clean. And I've noticed that quite a number of my students, I can tell that this is a policy at their homes because of how they flow. It's, you know, they're not sharing their supplies as we would like kids to do in the past. They're very much, you know, it's a little fear, you know, of contamination. You know, they're not in each other's faces and they're respecting the distance. And it's not like, oh, this teacher's asking me to do this. It's more, oh, I have to move back some because I'm too close to somebody. So it has to, it's like I said, it feels individualized by the school on how the principals and the staff ask for these protocols to be followed. I mean, like I said, we share our school building with two other schools and their middle schools. And I can tell that those schools are not as organized and on board as we are.
Wow. That's interesting.
Yeah. You know, and on top of that, they're, according to the Department of Education, teachers who refuse to be vaccinated, they're approximately 20% of the teaching population in New York City who refuse to be vaccinated. They will suffer through lack of pay. They either have to be put on medical leave without pay, or they are going to have to be tested once a week to prove that they do not have COVID or the Delta variant. So that adds another layer of stress. I was wondering
that's a good how question. You felt about good. That. That's a good question. I would like to know how our teachers feel about that, you know, the vaccination, and which is one of my questions that I got jotted down here. And I want to start with Shakira and go to Crystal and then go to Cardenia. What do y'all guys think about vaccination? That policy, that mandate?
I take the line that we have to do it. You know, we have to use vaccinations as another tool in the battle against COVID. And if for whatever reason someone feels like they don't want to do that or are unable to do that, right, because of their own health concerns, their consciousness, you know, you fill in the blank, distrust of government, you have that option. But the reality is when it comes to moments like this in history, we have to be responsible to other people, you know, for our own behaviors and also to other people. And as a community, it is something that we have to do. You can't force it. Well, people do have ways to force people to do it. And I did not take that option in my company. We encouraged it. We asked that people really consider it. And we did have policies that were in place if you weren't going to be vaccinated, including, you know, masking at all times and weekly testing, because I didn't feel comfortable forcing people to do it. But I do think we have a social responsibility.
Shakira, how do you feel about that?
So it's a very meaty question. So for me, vaccinations overall, I'm a science background.
Mm-hmm.
So for myself and my children, well, not for myself, for my children, when they were born, this was a discussion about vaccinations. Were we going to or were we not? My husband and I discussed it thoroughly, and we decided that, yes, we were going to get them vaccinated, but we weren't going to do it within the time that they're going to, that they asked. So in the greens with the doctor, their pediatrician, we staggered their vaccinations as far back as possible because, you know, they're little bodies and that's a lot of medication to put in a little body with a brain and organs developing. So we were never really excited about vaccination. So when this conversation came about us getting vaccinated, we were very much no, 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 we're not going to do it. But as time progressed and the numbers kept rising, this became a familial conversation, not only just with my husband, but with my parents and some other family members on whether or not we were going to go ahead and do it. And between my husband and I, we decided for various reasons. And for...
You did do it? You did. We lost you for a second.
We did, you know, get vaccinated. But I think it's a difficult choice for some to be... But it's a difficult choice for others because of their feelings toward it. But they have to put food on their table and feed their families. So... It's hard for many people, a lot of teachers, to have made that decision who were living a certain lifestyle prior to being told vaccinate or basically find some other employment if you can at this point. You know, so I don't know. I walk the line. Like, you do what you want with your own body. You make the decision for yourself. I don't particularly like the idea of forcing people to get vaccinated or to inject things into their body unless they want to do it, you know? So that's just my feeling for it. But in the schools, you know, it, as an educator, they kind of, if I remember the last statement about vaccinations is that you have to, and they took away the option of you getting tested weekly. So they're basically leaving teachers to have to get vaccinated. And for me, because in my head I was, you know, protesting, even though I got vaccinated, I didn't want to tell them about it.
Right.
I didn't know what the repercussions were. Like, you know, am I going to be forced to do something else because I am vaccinated now? Because I've been through that when being certified as a teacher. There's certain things that you are forced to do because you're a certified teacher versus an uncertified teacher. Right. So I kind of didn't send in my information for vaccination. And my principal came to me today and he was like, listen, you have to submit your information because they're calling it insubordination.
Oh, they're rolling it under that. Okay.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. That way they can fire you.
My point exactly.
Ah, I see. Cordelia, what do you think?
Wow. Thank you for sharing that, Ms. Shakira. That was eye-opening. I came up at a time where we were vaccinated whether our parents gave permission or not. I was talking about that with my siblings. We went to public school in DC, and I remember being shuttled along with the rest of my classmates to go get vaccinated. We don't know what it was. So I'm like, well, I survived that. and I know that it's a hard decision for a lot of families, but I personally chose to get vaccinated because I want to travel. I want to continue to travel. And I know, again, that this is a worldwide pandemic, and I knew that it was going to be necessary for travel. So I chose to get vaccinated for my own personal reasons. And again, I know that for schools, I've had to get vaccinations and shots every year or regularly. So again, as others have said, it's an individual decision, but I chose to go ahead and do it.
Well, I got an example, and, you know, it just, you know, calls for it at this point. I finished my undergrad and my graduate degree at nights. I was working, you know, homeowner, family, dog, wife, dog, whatever. And I went to Pace. I started there. And before I could go to class, they required me to take a vaccination that I couldn't prove that I had. I don't know what it was, but I had to take a bath. This is back in the 90s. I had to take a vaccination to attend classes at Pace University. Now, this is pre-COVID. It had nothing to do with COVID. It was just a required shot, I guess, that you got as a kid. But I had to take a shot before I could attend class. Otherwise, I wouldn't have been able to go to class. And I took the shot. There was no argument. So I don't see why the same wouldn't apply here. Why people can't reason it that way.
You know, one thing I would say, and this is reflecting on, Shakira, what you just shared, which is, you know, it's disgusting. It really is. The bait and switch, right? The fact that we can't trust our leaders to do what they say they're going to do. You know, to have you opt in to one policy, and if you opt out, it's used against you in another way. That level of duplicity only breeds the distrust that is really unraveling everything that we're trying to do in the system right now. It's not always that people, you know, oh, I just don't want to take the shot. There are those people, right? They're very conscious about what goes in their body. They know they spend a lifetime doing that. But most of the people who are doing it, who are not doing it, it is because of this lack of trust. And policies like what you just described only reinforce that. And so anyone in a point of leadership to have someone do something and then use that thing against them, you know, those are the practices that we have to call attention to and make sure they get stopped.
Okay.
I want to piggyback that real quick because I work for the same city that Shakira worked for. And, you know, that my agency, my former agency, they're transitioning and they're trying to do, they're demanding that people are not vaccinated, get tested weekly. And it's getting a lot of pushback. But I want to let you guys know, the problem is you're seeing your elected officials and your leaders now in a crisis. And this is when you recognize those people are not the ones that you need to have leading. Because when I used to always say, when somebody is heavy-handed with punishment, it is because they don't know how to work around something. They don't know how to get it right on their own. They don't have the wherewithal to come up with the ideas to fix things. And that's what's happening with the city of New York, in my opinion. They are ill-prepared for this task in front of them. It is too great for them. And instead of trying to come up with solutions with the people that are on the ground, they are punishing people. And that's how they always operate.
Yeah, I wanted to kind of clarify some things when it comes down to refusal and declining. People are being punished punitively for refusing. That would be insubordination. You can decline under either religious, moral, or ethical reasoning. Most times when it comes down to either one of those, especially for the religious part, religion is not considered to be static. So it didn't have to be something that you are overzealous about. You would have to meet with a medical provider. Then you obviously have to speak to whomever else is in charge of your agency. You will have to write a letter, make a declaration. But most of those are already accepted because there are many people who have not taken vaccinations for a number of different reasons. It is a much smaller population of individuals. But I think the hesitation comes because it doesn't become a choice. Like, even if you didn't, even if there are required vaccinations, they're required. They're not mandated. There's a difference between the two. There's still a choice that is there. But the choice, when you're sitting there saying, well, it's going to be either you're vaccinated or you're going to be fired, and fired in a sense where you can't collect unemployment, and employment is already hard enough to find, that is a tremendous situation to be in, and oftentimes very, very much unfair. And I think, to Chris's point, because they don't really know what to do. You have individuals who have received either Moderna or Johnson & Johnson, which are both still currently under emergency authorization. Only Pfizer has received FDA approval, and there's still a back and forth whether or not if you still need a third shot or not. And the FDA rejected the need for the third shot right now. So there's odds when it comes down to the information, which only fuels the distrust. It's like sitting there having $1 million, but you have somebody who is masked and holding a gun telling you to take it from their other hand. Like, yeah, I need $1 million, but I don't really trust the person. I don't really trust the situation. And you're saying, no, it's okay. It's not the ideal situation. And I think that if we were to slow down just a little bit more, get more, allow these conversations to kind of take and let people be able to choose for themselves. But I just wanted to make sure I said that. That's all.
Okay. All right.
Quickly say two things about that. Number one, correct me if I'm wrong, but the religious exemption waivers are being denied in this moment. And that's not something new. It's the Blasio administration implemented in conjunction with the measles outbreak a few years back.
If you're not talking, I'm sorry. If you're not speaking, please go on mute.
As a camp provider, there were years when we were allowed to take religious exemptions. And as of, I believe it was 2019, we were no longer allowed to take religious exemptions from our campers. If you were not vaccinated, you could not come to camp. And at my kid's school, if you were not vaccinated, you could not come to school. And that was new after years of people being able to opt out. So that's been removed in New York City at least. And then the second part is that there are a lot of providers who are refusing to write medical exemptions. There are some who are still doing it. I definitely have a resource, for one, if anyone's interested. But it's harder to find, to get a medical exemption from a doctor nowadays.
So in response to that, I'm more than certain that there are some areas that it is more difficult. The premise behind it is the level of sincerity. I have seen some people who have tried to use either religious, moral, or ethical reasoning or exemptions not in good faith. And that becomes a problem when you have people who are trying to undermine the system and kind of taking away the opportunity for those who wholeheartedly believe in either their religious, moral, or ethical rationale. So obviously that has been abused, and I'm in the DC area, and so not necessarily as familiar with what the mayor has done up there in New York, but it is supposed to be a sincere declaration, not one that's just made for the purpose of evasion.
Well, you know how people are. If it's available.
Yeah, right, yeah.
Yeah, they'll use it. Okay, all right. So any further questions from the panel? Chris, you got anything?
I just want to add real quick. When this pandemic hit, it was all the information was rolled out in such a confusing and haphazard way, and it was done on purpose to create all of this confusion that we're experiencing now. And the unfortunate thing is people are dying because of it. And that's mm-hmm. a bad thing. But, you know, it was purposely done this way for a few years with the previous administration and the administration coming in, not being able to get a hold of it, get a handle on it. It was so poisoned that now we are at odds with each other and people are losing their lives. And that's very unfortunate.
Yes, Chris, I agree. For the panel, for the guests, I would just like to ask, what are you doing to protect yourself during this time?
I'll go first. Okay. Can you hear me? I'll just, because mine is pretty brief, because I'm single. Thankfully, I can self-isolate and visit my family accordingly. I've taken the vaccination. And I'm doing all the self-help mindfulness that I can muster. So again, this was a great panel to be speaking on. I learned as much as I hope I was able to share. Thank you again for inviting me.
You're welcome. Thank you. I hope our listeners, this is for our listeners. So next, Crystal, please.
Yes, I am vaccinated. I'm encouraging others to also get vaccinated. I am practicing social distancing. I'm avoiding large gatherings where I'm unsure of whether or not, you know, people are vaccinated. And I am focusing on how to support the, you know, mental and emotional health of the people around me.
Okay, thank you. Shakira?
Same as Crystal. I'm social distancing as best as I can. We are still practicing the same habits that we've always practiced once COVID hit, as far as, you know, when we walk into our homes, we, you know, basically treat it like a quarantine section. We, you know, how we take our clothes off and sanitize our homes. Like I said, I was vaccinated. We don't do large social gatherings, but we do gather with family and friends whom we've known that either are going to wear their mask or they have been vaccinated. But for mental health, for my family, we have to get out of the home. We go, you know, take long drives. We do little hikes here and there. You know, we don't want our children to feel enclosed and unsocialized with other folks. So we're doing the best that we can during these times. And like I said, we are around family. So we just want to make sure we're not bringing anything to them.
Okay, thank you. Thank you. Anything from the panel? We're pushing up against the clock. Chris, you're going to take us home, right?
Oh, can I add one more thing?
Yes.
A positive that has come out of this pandemic, which Ms. Shakira reminded me of, is the increase in Black people hiking and doing outdoor activities. So I'm loving that, and I do get outside as much as possible. Mm-hmm.
Thank you. And that reminds me, we all should learn how to live off the grid. Off the grid meaning, you know, without electricity, learn how to just live in the forest. That's my final thought. That's what I got to say for y'all guys today. Okay? All right. So, Chris, you're going to do the close?
All right, guys. Thank you. Yes. Thank you, guys. We hope you all will join us for our next Friday Live. Thank you to our host, Walter Latham, and our weekly panel members, and of course to our live audience for joining us. Thank you, educators, for coming on and being honest and open about how you're feeling and what you're dealing with. And we wish you guys nothing but the best. You always have a home and a place to come at the Walt Weekly. We're on all platforms, Podbean, Spotify, iHeartRadio, Pandora, all streaming platforms, Instagram, Facebook. Share us, like us. Have a good night.
All right. With that said, I also just want to add, thank you, teachers. Your guys are on the front line. You're like soldiers. So, you know, you have, you know, my full gratitude. And good luck. Be safe. And we'll speak soon. Everybody else, have a great weekend. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Thank you. You too.